I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
On today's show, despite all the off-pitch turmoil, Chelsea kept the title race alive. We even got a Brandy Chastain tribute. We also look ahead to the FA Cup quarterfinals this weekend after the FA announced the tournament's prize money will increase next season. And the NWSL Challenge Cup kicks off in the States this weekend. So we wanted to hear from someone right at the heart of it. Rachel spoke to Freya Coombe, the coach of newly formed Angel City FC, about coaching at US Soccer's new hot property.
Winning the WSL in 2014, the last time someone outside of those three won a trophy. As Kerr comes through and Kerr scores! Chelsea have done it! In the second minute of stoppage time, Sam Kerr scores a goal to keep their WSL title hopes in their own hands. Pandemonium at King's Meadow.
She's in full flow now, gliding across the pitch. Heitema helps it on. Becky, time to cut inside and go on! Oh, that's the quality there! Janine Becky, Canada's second best in this game, but a reminder of their quality. What an excellent goal that is.
Guys, last week was quite intense, wasn't it?
It's been a week. It's been a week.
It's been a hell of a week. Rachel and I were following Chelsea Football Club around their kind of like dramatic week. We were there on Thursday night in Dagenham.
We were.
One night in Dagenham, which was kind of weird. I felt weird from the moment I got there, and I spoke to some Chelsea fans about this on Sunday. I got there about 5:30, and from the moment I arrived, it felt weird. There was no one there. The Chelsea coach was just about to arrive when I got there, and it just felt awkward and uncomfortable. And as I was driving to the stadium, I was listening to Five Live, and they were talking about Three suspending their sponsorship, and then I think Hyundai announced like a few hours later, and just everything was just felt really awkward and uncomfortable. I don't know if you felt like that too, Rachel.
A little bit. It felt a little bit like an elephant in the room that none of us were really addressing.
Totally.
And I can't imagine what it was like from a player perspective, having all of that going on while you're preparing for a game and you're on the coach to the game and getting off at the ground. And yeah, it must have been pretty weird for them as well. And we were both wondering how they were going to manage the whole three suspension thing, but they came out with three on their shirts. And even on Sunday, it was still around the ground, still on their shirts. So yeah, it was an unusual game. They did well, I think, to kind of put it to bed and to kind of focus for the 90 minutes on the pitch. But yeah, I imagine it was quite difficult, and it was unusual to be at something like that and kind of not really addressing the big thing.
And then also the West Ham came out at the start of the game with a Ukrainian flag, and they had the shirt of Andrei Yarmolenko, plays for the men's side. He scored on Sunday as well. It was a really emotional goal for him. And Chelsea stood there in the centre of the pitch as well, but it just felt really strange knowing what had happened to their owner mere hours before the sanctions, his links to Vladimir Putin, and then the team standing there. It just, everything about the whole occasion was strange. And then we went and did it all over again on Sunday at King's Meadow, both you and I, again, kind of, and the press, both times, the press boxes were very empty. Thursday night, there was myself, Sophie, handful of other people. And then on Sunday, there was a handful of other people again. It was bizarre because for me, right now, this is the biggest story in town across the men's and women's game. And I know Chelsea fans have certainly felt like the general press, the general football press, have not been covering this story and how it affects the women's side as much. And I can kind of agree with them, the fact that, I mean, Thursday night, some people missed the accreditation deadline, which is fine. And I think some people joined remotely for the press match on Zoom, for the press conference on Zoom. But on Sunday, everyone was at Spurs City, in football terms, the biggest story of the weekend. But this is the biggest story in football right now. And I was really surprised how it was based just me and you, like, oh, cool, hey.
I mean, it was entirely unintentional that I did Chelsea. That wasn't the reason I did it. And I think the fact that all of this happened so late in the week, I think a lot of journalists probably had their fixtures confirmed for the rest of the week. So that could be something to do with it.
Oh no, that's totally to do with it. I mean, a lot of them would have felt, well, you know, this, there isn't a conclusion to this story. Things are still unraveling. We still don't know what's going to happen. So let's just carry on and go to Spurs City or whatever. But I was just surprised because you felt like, it felt like we were kind of on this like traveling circus following the round to see what might happen next, to see what Emma Hayes is going to say next. And then actually things ended up being everything about what was happening on the pitch, which was great. And rather than the stuff off it, with Sam Kerr just pulling off absolute magic in the last minute, swinging a shirt round her head, Emma Hayes trying to throw punches as well. It was just so good.
Can we talk about that? I loved that celebration. And I've seen some, maybe it's some salty people who aren't Chelsea fans, but this thing of it like being not a good thing that she whipped her shirt off to celebrate. Oh my God, come on.
I know,
on.
But people are just fun sponges, man. Oh. It's just the internet.
Vivian,
it's just the
Miedema
world.
Doesn't celebrate enough. Now Sam Kerr is celebrating too much. Like, just...
Rachel, I always tell you have to mute and block these people on social media. I'm trying to tell you this, right? Don't let the fun sponges ruin it for you.
It was pure passion. Pure
exactly,
passion.
Right?
And I think that's what the club needed at that time. They need an over-exaggerated positive response to a really tumultuous, difficult week. And I think, you know, the response that Emma Hayes had to, you know, just getting that last minute goal, getting that last minute win and riding the storm of a ridiculous week for the club is just fantastic. You can see how much it meant to them, having gone through such a difficult time. The players probably facing all kinds of uncertainty, not knowing what the situation is. We're obviously coming towards the end of the season. The players are probably thinking about contracts and their futures and things. And to, you know, come off the back of that with two wins, I think is a credit to the professionalism of the club. So yeah, Sam Kerr doing backflips and ripping her shirt off with passion is fine by me. She deserves it.
So Sam Kerr getting a top off 10 out of 10 for Chloe Morgan, is that what we're saying?
That is, you've twisted that. You've made that weird, and that's,
I can see
not
the
what
headlines
I intended.
Now.
That's going to be the isolated clip, isn't it?
But also, I know, and I would have been one of the people on Zoom saying this, if they had drawn that game, and honestly, Goalkeepers Union, Chloe, Hannah Hampton was
unreal.
Absolutely sensational on Sunday, and I was questioning the fact that she was in the England squad because I think she'd had a difficult season so far and she started that Spain game. But honestly, she has just proved so many people wrong, including myself. But I know that if the game had finished 0-0, the conversation to Hayes and Chelsea would have been, oh, did what was happening at the club this week, did it impact the players? Do you think they were feeling it a little bit? Because Chelsea were off. Like, they were sloppy in possession sometimes. They were making a lot of mistakes. They weren't finishing their chances. They weren't as ruthless as we've seen them in the last couple of weeks. And I feel like the narrative totally would have been about that. And then suddenly it was like, oh, these guys know how to win. They're champions. This is what champions do.
Yeah, I'm going to agree that obviously off the pitch stuff would have had a massive impact on that. But when I was prepping for this game on Sunday, there is definitely going to be an element of tiredness in that Chelsea squad. They've had games in the 5th, the 10th and the 16th, and they have games the 20th, 23rd and 26th. So they've literally got 3 to 4 days max between games at the moment.
They're actually probably half relieved they're not in the Champions League anymore.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter how good a squad you are or how professional you are going to suffer with fatigue. I know we also talk a lot about the depth of Chelsea's bench, and I think part of that is probably to do with the names that they can actually pull off the bench, because they've got some unreal players in that squad, obviously. But they had two teenagers on the bench there on Sunday. They had Fleming, who had been released from COVID that morning, and Cuthbert, who had yet to have a training session with the squad. So that just gives you an idea of...
And Frank Kirby still out.
Yeah, of course, there was a lot of players out, but in terms of who they actually had available, that kind of gives you an idea of they were spread pretty thin. And the fact that Fleming and Cuthbert both needed to come on, I thought the bench did make an impact in that game. Ingle was brilliant when she came on, but that was the levels that Hayes had to go to try and squeeze a win out of that game. And I'd say that was the biggest relief. Obviously, not staying in the title race is obviously huge, but I'd say the biggest relief is, thank God, the questions aren't going to be about how the players are impacted by what's going on off the pitch, and we've got those 3 points.
I think in terms of, but I also think we need to give credit to Villa, because I think they had a pretty decent game.
They were sensational.
Massive credit.
Chelsea had some missed chances, and I think, they should have converted a lot more of those opportunities. But when you look at some of the emergency defending that's going on, the amazing saves from Hannah Hampton, I think credit to Villa, who seems to be finding their feet a little bit more this season. So yes, Chelsea could have done better, but I think Villa made it a bloody difficult little battle.
Yeah, they were excellent. And I thought the midfield pairing of Ruche Littlejohn and Jill Scott is really starting to click. They just need time, you know, and this is the thing in this game is, like, we've talked about it before, how expectations on new managers and relatively new squads is so high, but like it's gonna come for them. They just need time. I thought everyone was pretty exceptional.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to talk about what's going on as well, because it's been an interesting one. Like I said, I feel like a lot of the attention hasn't been around the impact on the women's side. And we don't know. There's a lot of questions that still remain about the impact of these sanctions, not just on the women's team, but on the men's team as well, because the special license that's been granted by the government essentially is like for like for the women's team and the academy side. So the same kind of restrictions on budget, the same kind of restrictions on contracts. It's like for like for the women's team. And, you know, the 20,000 away budget is not going to impact the women's team. They're not going to spend that much money. But the contract situation obviously will. We've got some big Chelsea players, Drew Spence, G being one of them as well, who are Maren Mjelde, who are going to be out of contract in the summer. Now, a new owner may come in that the government negotiate a sale with, and there's already been rumours about it potentially being a Saudi-based group. And that could make all the conversations around what's going to happen to the women's team completely redundant, because the problem could be solved fairly quickly if a new owner does come in. But there certainly still is uncertainty around the team, around the amount of money that they're losing because of this, because they haven't got that financial backing at this moment in time. Conversations around the future of Thomas Tuchel on the men's side. Obviously, the same conversations must be having about Emma Hayes and her future there. Conversations about players on the men's side, you know, being willing to take wage cuts and things like that. And we know the men's team are going to be on a hell of, or are on a hell of a lot more than the women's players are earning. But there must be those same conversations happening in the dressing room where players kind of look at each other, and Chloe, I'll come to you on this as someone who kind of obviously has that experience, kind of looking at each other and saying, you know, I might want to think about what I'm doing next, because I don't know what the future is going to look like at this football club.
I think a lot of those players are going to be speaking to their agents and getting advice on where to go, potential new clubs, you know, how things are going to go. And I think this next couple of weeks, you know, I don't know what the situation is with the club speaking to the government about the sort of reducing of those sanctions, or trying to sort of make sure the main club can operate in as best and the most effective way as possible. But I think for me as a player, I'd be feeling pretty unsettled and potentially sort of looking at, well, I think one of the risks maybe is of clubs or clubs in Europe starting to look at Chelsea now as a little bit of a ground for some fantastic players. So what I don't want to see is obviously a drain from the WSL when some of these fantastic top players that we have in the UK right now are going elsewhere. And I think, you know, like you touched on, I think the impact of not only just the men's and the women's clubs, but also I'm thinking about the academy, and, you know, the young boys and girls who are going to be affected by that. There's so much talent coming up, especially in the girls' academy from Chelsea. And I don't want that to stop either. So I just think that's a big concern for me as well.
Yeah, and Chelsea have set the standard in many ways, not just on the pitch, but with the way that the comms are delivered around the women's team. Until the sanctions, they had a live Instagram show that they would do at King's Meadow and at some big away games as well. They were at the Conti Cup final. They were at all the home games. They were at City Academy Stadium for some of those big games at Borehamwood, I'm sure, as well, for Arsenal game. And that's gone because of the sanctions. So that's a big element of what the women's team were doing from a kind of like marketing perspective, from a publicity perspective, and getting that awareness about the women's side. That's gone straight away. Obviously, there's a huge amount of sports science, coaching staff. You know, they've been setting the standard in women's football in many ways and driving the standard in women's football in many ways. Like getting their wallets out, signing the biggest players in the world in Pernille Harder and Sam Kerr. And I suppose, is it going to be a situation that we've had in the men's game where other clubs are kind of like licking their lips in the potential of stealing some of those players? Or is it more of a concern about, well, if we lose one of the big guns, what's the ripple effect going to be on other clubs?
Yeah, maybe not so much other clubs. I think it will have a massive effect on Chelsea itself. I think there is a concern there, especially in the women's game, like with it still being relatively new. You know, we can all still remember the clubs that have been dropped and whatever, stopped being funded by their men's team and ultimately either disappearing or dropping down the table. So I do think the worry around the women's team is entirely valid. But yeah, I think what you're saying there, this idea of, you know, clubs coming in and kind of potentially poaching some of these big names is a risk. It also raises some of the issues we've talked about in the past about quite short contracts and not having players sign up for kind of longer periods. Now, they do have players currently signed up until 2024, I think, as far as I'm aware. I know the likes of Magda Eriksson and Pernille Harder are until 2023. Sam Kerr, I think, until 2024. So if they can hang on to them.
And Lauren James, she's signed a huge contract.
Quite a long contract, yeah, as well. So it's, I guess, about hanging on to them. And as you say, if this gets settled and resolved,
then it won't matter.
Then it won't matter.
Yeah.
But it does kind of highlight some of the areas that maybe we naively thought we wouldn't have to worry about as much in the women's game anymore. And, you know, I think there is, some of the fans spoke about how the fear of that funding coming down from the owner, and it's not always guaranteed, is it?
When we look at the concept of sports washing, which I would put the Abramovich Chelsea era under that, and we've got examples of that, yeah, across the whole Premier League, across the WSL as well, whether it's Newcastle and their Saudi Arabia-based owners, whether it's Man City and Abu Dhabi-based owners, whether it's PSG and their Qatar-based owners. I think you'd put that under that umbrella. And I think why you'd probably, as a women's fan, think the women's team may be safe is women's football, when it comes to sports washing, is a great move. And I think, you know, when you look at Man City and their rise, it certainly helped with that brand and that kind of method of sports washing, because when you're trying to rebrand the reputation of a nation state, or perhaps, you know, cause a few distractions about what a nation state is doing, supporting women's football and supporting women's sport is a great move, because it does rebrand that in so many ways, because it shows that you care about certain aspects, and it is a bit of a positive distraction. So in that respect, I think it depends who the new owner is, but I do think that a lot of women's football fans could probably think, well, if my club does get taken over by a questionable owner, women's football could be safe, because these people don't care a lot of the time about the finances and the kind of raw materials and the balance sheets, because money is no object for them. What they care about is the brand, and women's football is good for the brand. But is that actually a negative thing?
Well, this is what I find frustrating. Like, we've lifted the rock now and all of this kind of stuff, and a light is being shone on the amount of dirty money in football. And if the UK government turn around and agree to allow this Saudi consortium to take over Chelsea, it's all been for nothing. And we're just going to end up carrying on and going on about our business and forgetting about all these conversations that we've been talking about, which is really, really frustrating. It feels like there's a moment now where you can actually start to try and make a little bit of change.
Yeah, I suppose
we're at a stage though, aren't we, in English football where it's like we're in too deep. And but, that's what I feel like you mean, whereas in like, well, now you've done it, there's really good opportunity to like rip everything up and start again. But at the same time, we're in way too deep. So actually, if you, now it's like the horse has bolted long time ago, and you would really have to like get down to the bare bones in order to sort this problem out.
To me, though, I think it'd be interesting to see what the response would be from players like, the more outspoken players, Magdalena Eriksson, Pernille Harder, and what Emma Hayes would be saying if there was a question of owner that took over. Because you might well see that even though, you know, the club is saved financially, some of these players might walk away on a moral or ethical basis. So, you know, they're outspoken players. So it'll be interesting to see whether they sort of tie their mask to their previous views on issues like this.
I think the thing is, though, is you would need a genuine UK government actually wanting to make changes for the right reason, and not, you know, dirty money is good money when it's approved. But, you know, at the end of the day, dirty money's dirty money. And I think there was a good piece on Versus, a Chelsea fan kind of discussing the situation from their perspective. And they had a really good line in it saying about, while we continue to wave our blue flags, we can't ignore the red ones. And I thought that was a really good line, because there have been red flags in the game for many, many, many years. And is this actually the moment where we're going to... I know we're in too deep, but that's not a reason to try and change it, not to try and change it.
Totally. I think, I mean, shout out Myra Quadri as well for that. Really, really good piece. And I know he felt quite difficult about writing that, because I think if you are a fan of that club, like, I'm not a Chelsea fan. Chloe, you're not a Chelsea fan, are you? And you're like, you know, obviously your wife's a Chelsea fan, but that connection isn't as deep as it is for her. And you can kind of, you know, it's easy to detach yourself from that. And I do think it's hard when you are a fan of the club. And that's why you see a lot of people on social media, I think, lacking some of that self-awareness in many ways, because you want your club to do well. You have an emotional bond. And it's really hard to take a step back and think about the bigger picture.
Absolutely.
But I completely agree with you. I think it's vital that we do unpack this and see it as a moment in the game to get better. But unfortunately, I just think it's just not logical. And when we look at the situation with Newcastle, I think that self-awareness is massively important, because I've seen people on my timeline who are, you know, really looking at what's going to happen for Newcastle United and their women's team as a really positive moment for women's football. And I couldn't disagree more, because I think that is the absolute peak of sports washing. It's using success for the women's team to paper over the realities of what a certain country is doing. And when we look at the reality of the situation now, and why Roman Abramovich was welcomed with open arms to not just Chelsea, but to the UK, was because the UK and London was desperate for Russian money. It needed oligarchs to come over here, invest in businesses, to buy football clubs. And it was primed for this opportunity. And it's then ironic now that they turn around and say, oh, sorry, you can't own a football club anymore, because it's all about the flavour of the month. And now the UK government is in deep with Saudi Arabia, selling millions and billions of arms to it, you know, going begging for it to produce oil because we're in an energy crisis and it needs the oil. And that is the flavour of the month, and turning a blind eye to atrocities that are happening in Yemen, because we need that money. We are desperate for it. And that's why, you know, the takeover of Newcastle went through in many ways, is because that relationship and that bond is strong right now. But that can change in an instant. And we look at what's happening with Abramovich and Russia, and that changed, that relationship changed. And now the government realise, oh, we can't be doing that with oligarchs from Russia. But I think there are two really important things here. It's that what are you comfortable with, and what are you happy to see in the game? And all of it is subjective,
at
right?
At what cost?
And all of it is subjective. People say, oh, I'm happy with this, but I'm not happy with this, because there are so many grey areas.
We're
here.
We're very subjective with our morals,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's an uncomfortable situation, but, you know, these conversations are important to have. And from all aspects, we should be looking at it from everybody's point of view and lots of different opinions, rather than just kind of closing ourselves off to things that we don't agree with. I think ultimately, the one thing I will say about this whole situation is that we should never lose sight of the bigger picture of what's going on in the world, and that the war, this horrendous war in Ukraine, you know, as we continue to wake up every day in a safe country with our health, you know, touch wood, and our livelihoods kind of still intact, that we should count ourselves very, very lucky that, you know, these are the kind of questions we're asking ourselves rather than are we going to be safe today? So it's been quite an interesting week in terms of a lot of people confronting uncomfortable truths. But whether we'll actually come out of the other side of it in a positive light, I don't know, or whether this is something, if this is going to be another flash in the pan.
From a women's football perspective, though, I think the biggest frustration, I think, is obviously what the clubs can't do. In many respects, the women's clubs are, you know, their hands are tied behind their backs. They don't really have a seat at the table when these decisions are being made about who the owners should be and what ethical and moral considerations should be taken into account. So I think obviously these discussions need to be had, and it's great that so much awareness has been raised around the issue. But I think I don't envy the women's club's position because they're so reliant on the finances from the men's clubs. I don't think they're there. We don't have a position of power to be able to negotiate what's happening at that level.
I totally agree. We demand equality, and the equality we get is we're equal in sanctions, but we're not equal when it comes to decision making at the actual club table, at the board table. It's such a good point. I think the fact that it changes so quickly, we don't really have any real answers yet. Yeah. I think we'll be in a different position next week. We'll be in a completely different position in 2 weeks' time. It's so fast moving. We don't really know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it's an important moment for football to kind of reflect, exactly, to have a bit of self-awareness, have a bit of reflection. And, you know, the irony of Chelsea and Newcastle facing each other in the Premier League on Sunday was, I don't think, lost on many people. But football is a toxic place sometimes, so we'll see what happens. But we'll keep you posted on this show and see where it goes.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So back to the football. There is going to be some football this weekend. The FA Cup is back. It's the quarter-final stage. I have to say, all of the WSL clubs have got off pretty lightly on this one. And I mean WSL, I mean kind of like the big WSL clubs in terms of the favourites to win this competition. You've got Arsenal drawn against Coventry United at home on Friday. You've got Ipswich hosting West Ham, Man City hosting Everton, and Chelsea hosting Birmingham on Sunday. All pretty juicy ties for the home sides there and the bigger WSL clubs. And they'd all be looking at those draws and thinking, pretty good chance we're going through to semi-finals.
Yeah, I would think that a number of those big teams have had some pretty big scares this FAWSL season. So I would like to think they're going to be going into those games not taking it too lightly. Coventry have been on a pretty decent run of form, actually, the last couple of weeks. They drew with Durham at the weekend, beat Palace, sorry, Chloe. Drew with Charlton before that. They had two clean sheets in a row. I think they'll set up pretty defensively against Arsenal, understandably, but it will be interesting to see how the Gunners break that down. But there's a huge amount of resilience in that squad, and I think that's going to count for a lot in that fixture.
I like upset watch. I mean, you went to that Southampton or Ipswich Southampton game a couple of weeks ago, that ridiculous one where the Southampton goalie scored to take it to penalties. I feel like that's probably the biggest upset could be Ipswich. They're at home. We know, Chloe, you always talk about how hard it is when you go to a National League side and the state of the pitch. So Ipswich are at home, probably going to be a good rowdy crowd. I think that could be the upset.
That could be, yeah, that could be very tasty. It was quite a tight affair, I think, between the Hammers and Birmingham last weekend. So I'm sure Ipswich were looking at that and looking at areas to exploit. They'll need to be a bit more forthcoming with goals, I think, than they were when they played Southampton, because it did feel like no one was ever going to score. But that could be a very tasty fixture. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm going to call it. I'm going to say Ipswich won't win that game.
I'm going to call it. Like, you're going to. No, I was like, yes, here we go.
Debbie Downer, here we go.
No, I mean, I can't see them winning that game, in all honesty. I don't see them scoring any goals, but I don't see them conceding in full time.
Can
I think
to
they're going to park the bus and take it to penalties. Yeah, I think
and
they're going to
make it
very difficult.
And you think West Ham will win it on penalties?
Yeah. Yeah, right. I'll say that. Yeah, why not?
Okay. I mean, that's still fun. That's still,
right.
You know.
I'm going to throw one in here, which will be entirely wrong because we've established that I cannot predict things for shit. But Birmingham manager, obviously, you know, calling on his squad to kind of revamp the public perception. Not sure how they're going to do that with an 8-point deficit or 8 points, you know, from safety. But I do wonder if maybe focusing on a different competition will give them a kind of new lease of life. Maybe they smell blood a little bit with all the tumultuous stuff going on for Chelsea. Chelsea are tired. They're kind of depleted. So maybe Birmingham can pull off an upset. I mean, we're probably going to come in here next week and it'll be like 6-0 and everyone's going to be like,
yeah,
get her
I'm
off
not,
the pot.
I'm not sure where you're going with that one.
I'm trying to be
yeah,
positive
I was
here.
Say, Rachel, I'm normally on board with everything you say, but that's a big ask.
Listen, I was right about Viv Stenius. I could be right about this.
Yeah, and the other big FA Cup story this week is prize money, because we finally have the number for the new prize money for the FA Cup from next season. £3 million prize pot. We don't know the distribution yet, which is the key thing, because we spoke about when this was hinted at last time when they released that news that was going up. We said it's all about the distribution. It's all about the split at each round and making sure that the whole pyramid benefits from this and it's not just the rich getting richer. So very intrigued to see when that's confirmed.
They did say that a disproportionate amount will be going into the earlier rounds.
That's what we like to hear.
That's what we like to hear. So hopefully, you know, that's positive.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I suppose for you, Chloe, as well, you've had a lot of experience playing this competition. Do you think it just instant? I know it, like the history is there already. When you look at the Conti Cup and you look at the FA Cup, Conti Cup's only been going 11 years. And the FA Cup has so much history. Just the trophy alone is so nice. It's so cool. Like, just when you think of English football, you think of the FA Cup. So we know it's already an attractive tournament, an attractive competition. But do you think increasing this just makes it that much more special? It just gives it a bit more respect and a bit more status. And it doesn't just, in some ways, like become an amateur competition. Like when you look at some of the prize money, it makes it seem amateur.
I think it's definitely going to be taken a lot more seriously now by clubs lower down in the league, because I think in the sort of national leagues and lower, I think now, because it actually means that winning the game is going to mean something. It's not going to mean you win this game and then actually your club's going to be out of pocket for the next stage. That was the reality of how the situation was. So, you know, when you look at how, you know, some of the clubs have progressed this year, with Coventry now being in the quarterfinals, teams like Ipswich being in the quarterfinals, and, you know, what that would mean to them to take it through to the semi-finals would be a fantastic result. And I think it's not only just the prize money, but the kind of kudos that goes with that. And I think we're going to see sort of more of the games being covered as well, which would be great. Exposure for some of the teams lower down the league. So yeah, I think the sort of the attraction of the FA Cup, the kind of momentum that it's going to see behind it, I think is definitely going to increase in with next year. I think it's fantastic. Yeah.
And you don't have to worry quite so much about stuff off the pitch as well, surely. You know, hopefully we're not going to be seeing clubs having to crowdfund to get to a match. They can focus on football.
I was going to say, I think there may be an adjustment coming as well on the split of gates, but I need to follow up on that. But that would be important as well, because we know at the moment that the home side keep everything. So it's great for a team like Ipswich hosting West Ham, because you get a big crowd and they have to pay for, you know, all the costs of things, but it also means that they get to keep everything and they keep all the gate receipts. But there does need to be a bit more of an even split in that, like we see in the men's side. So for example, if it's a WSL team hosting an away side, that they get a bit more of a split with that, because at the moment it is, you know, completely with the home side. So that'll be interesting. But I mean, Ipswich must be a bit annoyed, because if they'd got to this stage next season, they'd probably be taking home a lot more than they are right now. But hopefully, with the backing that they've got, and especially with Southampton, like, next season you'd like to see these teams back there again. But it's good news. I feel like we've been waiting so long for this, and I think it just elevates things instantly. And I actually do think, like, I know it sounds ridiculous to say, but I just do think, like, bigger picture and the perception, I think it will shut up a lot of the people on Twitter who are like, oh, look, the prize money's only like $2,000, so, you know, like, the National League gets more than that, blah, 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 which is always what you get when you have a conversation about women's football and prize money and equal pay. Everyone's like, oh, but, you know, you only got like £3,000 for this, blah, blah, blah. I think it's really important, because I think it will just shut up a lot of those people on the internet and give the Women's FA Cup the respect it deserves. So now something a little bit special for this week, which is very exciting, because we've got a big name on the show. Because the NWSL Challenge Cup returns this week, and there's going to be a new kid in town with Angel City FC. Lots of people may have heard of them, because they've got some big owners, some celebrity owners, Serena Williams, Natalie Portman, Eva Longoria, as well as some of the 99ers, Mia Hamm, Julie Foudy, among others. So it's the big name in women's football right now.
The team, Angel City FC, are being coached by a Brit who's played over here and has been coaching in the US for a little while now. Freya Coombe was coaching at Reading until 2014 before she headed over to the US and took charge of Sky Blue and Gotham FC in the NWSL. Last year, she was named the first coach of Angel City ahead of their new season.
Yeah, so ahead of their game on Saturday, I sat down with Freya to chat about her career, her transition into coaching, and what it's like on the eve of this new era for women's football in LA.
Thank you so much for taking time to chat to us. Really appreciate it. So you played for Reading over here for 5 years before moving across to the United States. How much change did you see over that time in a professional sense?
Yeah, so I was at Reading. I left in 2014. That was when I came over to the States. And I've been in the States now for about 8 years, just coming up on 8 years. Wow. So, but during my time at Reading, saw huge changes there at the club. From the academy, then having the first team going professional, when Jane Ludlow came in and worked with Kelly Chambers, we saw a big change in the level of the team there. And then ever since I left in 2014, it's just continued to get stronger and stronger. The move to the Medeski has been absolutely brilliant for the club, and I think that's been reflected in the global game too, with the raising standards and the developments that we've seen, particularly in the Spanish league, Italian league, and now all over. So I think the game is changing a lot.
Do you keep an eye on them? Do you keep an eye on their scores, or do you try and catch some of the matches when you can?
I definitely keep an eye on the scores. I get the game notifications through my football app each week. So always keeping an eye out and keeping in touch. Grace was there in the academy when I was a coach in the academy, and she's, you know, she's still going strong in goal. And obviously Kelly and Phil and all the staff with the staff that I sort of coach with and were my peers as we were running the girls' academy there. So yeah, always keeping an eye out and wishing them to do well and celebrating when Kelly got manager of the month. That was awesome. So yeah, cheering her on.
And speaking of the US, you know, what are some of the differences you've noticed since moving there? Obviously, first with Sky Blue, now Gotham FC, and now obviously a really exciting club now with Angel City. What are the differences over there?
Yeah, I think the biggest one for the English game is crowds. You know, if we're looking at Angel City, you know, this year we've got a stadium of the capacity of 22,000 and having sold at this moment in time 14,000 season tickets, it's pretty incredible. And I think that's something where this league has particularly got a bit of an advantage on the English game in terms of being able to draw a crowd. And I think, you know, that's something that the national team here have set in place, and now we continue to get people in the crowds, and there's just such an excitement and such a buzz around this new project in Los Angeles. So, you know, I think that's huge, and that's a part of the game where I think it's continued to grow. And, you know, we're seeing that the amount of sponsorship dollars coming into the game as well, particularly with Angel City, it's setting new levels and new standards. So that's a really exciting project to be part of. And that's a big reason for the move for me to come here, is to be part of something that's so big and so new. It's been an exciting time.
You've obviously, you know, appointed in this new role, and you have a bit of time ahead of the season starting. What are like both the challenges and the opportunities of having that time?
Yeah, so it's kind of strange because you think, you know, you've got time. So I officially started in November with the club. So, you know, most people would look at it as pre-season starts on the 1st of February. You've got so much time to, you know, put in place, you know, the sessions and how you want to play and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, you've got to build a team. So, you know, most of November and December was spent just watching players and looking at recruitment and thinking, you know, we've got the expansion draft, we've got the college draft over here as well. So, you know, you have to be up on who all the best college players are, and then being prepared for all the different contingencies. So we went into it with first round picks, second round picks, and then, you know, made trades and got players in through the door with experience. And then, you know, that changed all the rounds and the college players that would then be available for us when we actually did come in the third round of the draft. So you had to have a really good knowledge of all the college draft players, not just, you know, the top ones, but also the ones that may be, you know, in the round three and still available. And yeah, so it was so busy in recruiting. And I think that's, you know, gave us an opportunity as well to, you know, after we're done with recruiting, then to sit down as staff and think about, okay, this is what we want, but we had to build our staff team too. And, you know, this is the first time that most of us have worked together. I'd worked with Dan, the goalkeeper coach, before, but everyone else is new. So, you know, that presents a challenge in itself in terms of getting to know each other, what's expected, setting rules, you know, and objectives and goals as staff members too. So I can tell you those 3 months went pretty quickly.
And how does it feel for you? Like, you're joining a new project. Does it feel like you can put your own stamp on things? You know, there's not already an established, you know, club there. You can kind of have a part in all different aspects, not just the coaching side of it.
Yeah, I think there's elements where, you know, I'm mostly in charge of the coaching side because of the roles and responsibilities. And we do have a large number of staff at the club. Whereas in previous roles, you're kind of being asked to do a little bit of everything. But here, my job is very much focused on coaching the team. And so, you know, when I get the players that have come in to the club that the sporting director has recruited, then my job is to coach the team and to put the best product out on the field. So, you know, that's my area of focus. And I think we're really fortunate that we have so many people that are amazing at their job at the organisation to help then, you know, be able to fulfil the other roles within the club. You know, our media content team is an absolute beast, and the content that comes out is such a high level. We have a fantastic community department. We have an amazing sponsorship and revenue department that are able to put us in the position that we are. And, you know, the management of the club, it is absolutely brilliant, and the leadership that we've got. So, you know, we're very fortunate that we have a large staff base in order to, you know, everyone can really be specialists in their roles.
Just looking back on your previous role, how was it trying to coach during a pandemic?
Yeah, that was a huge challenge because we'd only completed the first week of preseason and then we got shut down. New York was very heavily hit. So I think we felt the gravity of the situation being in the New York market, whereas I think there were some other teams across the league where we got shut down nationwide, but COVID really wasn't a problem in some of the, you know, other towns and cities across the league. So they were kind of like shut down and like, well, what's going on? And then, you know, in New York, we had a very severe situation with, you know, so many casualties, unfortunately. But the biggest thing is we learned how to pivot. I think some things were really interesting, actually, in terms of, you know, learning how to do film via Zoom and doing match analysis with players logging on and dealing with some of the technology issues. And I think the biggest thing for us was trying to keep going where, you know, we had new players in again, trying to bring everyone up to speed and in terms of the start of a preseason, in terms of how we want to play. But then it was like, well, when are we actually going to go and play? There was so much uncertainty. So the biggest thing that we did as well was outside of the football stuff was really made sure that we checked in and had regular contact with the players. So, you know, we launched coffee mornings for players that maybe moved into the area of the country where they didn't know anyone. We hadn't really had much of pre-season for them to really bond with their teammates. They weren't allowed to socialize. Everyone had to stay inside because we were really shut down in the area that we were in. So it was really on, you know, reaching out and making sure that everyone was taking care of themselves and had what they needed to have, and, you know, getting Instacart deliveries to players, you know, if they weren't allowed to go to the grocery store, things like that. So, it was a hectic time, but it was a time where, you know, you learned a lot about yourself and your teammates.
I bet as well. And then I know a lot of the players have said it here as well. It really makes you value when you can come back together and you can train together and be back on the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was a real sense of, you know, relief when, you know, we managed to get on into the Challenge Cup, and I think everyone really enjoyed being back together, being trained, back on the field and training when we could. And then obviously, you know, went off to the Challenge Cup and were the first professional sports league back to have games. So that was really exciting because I think that, you know, that opportunity gave a lot more exposure to the league, and we had a lot more players and people watching our games, which was great.
So hopefully on the tail end of COVID now, so we can move on to your positive, you know, positive things and your new project. Eni Aluko, obviously the new director of football at Angel City, who we know quite well over here. What's it been like working with her?
Yes, you know, it's been great. It was another weird one where I was based on the East Coast, she was in England, and although we'd been working together for 3 months, we didn't actually meet in person until January. So, you know, that was kind of strange. It was like, oh, we've been working together for so long, feel so familiar with each other, and then it was like, okay, nice to meet you finally. So that was interesting. But no, it's been good. Obviously, she's got great experience from not only her playing days at Chelsea and with England, and, you know, lately with Juventus as well. So got a good reach and good knowledge of players within the league, and, you know, the global leagues really. So it's been fun to work with her and have her sort of lead on that player recruitment.
And, you know, we can't not talk about your investors. Have you had any dealings with any of them in the club? It's quite the lineup.
Yeah, you know, they've been absolutely brilliant. They're all very, very supportive and enthusiastic about the club. So it was kind of strange the first day of pre-season where you have your kickoff meeting and Natalie Portman's there sort of rallying the troops and talking to all the players. So it's been great. They've been really involved, and it's nice to see the investors coming in and Julie Foudy screaming on the sidelines at a pre-season game. It's been really, really great. And loved having them around and, you know, in the environment. And they're really excited about the first game. We've got a number of them coming in, and, you know, it's just brilliant how much that they are backing and behind the team.
That must be so surreal, though, when you look back at even women's football in England, where it was maybe 10, 15 years ago, and now you're standing on the sideline with Natalie Portman, like, giving a rallying speech. That must be so surreal.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about it, but it's really great. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, when we have our first game at the Bank of California, it's, I think it's going to be quite a celebrity lineup in the crowd. So it'll be a bit of a who's who, I think, because there's so many people that are just behind it. And not even if they're an investor in the club, but there's, you know, celebrities that we know that are, you know, fans of football and want to get behind their local team. So it's going to be great.
Oh, it's amazing. Very jealous. Sponsor of the team must allocate 10% of the deal to projects in the local area. How important do you think that is? And have you managed to visit any of them yet?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, I think this is really groundbreaking and something that we're doing. It's not just token money being shared with the club. It's actually getting sponsors and people and brands that are aligned with what we want to do in the community. You know, having a platform to be able to communicate and be able to have that vehicle to be able to go out into the community and actually facilitate being involved in community projects. So, you know, it's great to see some of the events. I haven't been there yet, just because we're still in a kind of a bit of a COVID-y time. So we're still trying to be quite careful with, you know, how much mixing that we're doing outside of the team environment. And also, you know, pre-season, it can be a bit of a tricky schedule, but I know that I will definitely be out at some of the events when the time allows, because, you know, it's brilliant, whether it's, you know, going down Venice Beach and working with skateboarders in a female skateboard league, whether it's having a big empowerment event for at the bank for International Women's Day. I think there's so many great things that are being done by our community team and our sponsorship team with our sponsors. So very grateful for the model that we've got and being able to see that change that's out there right now.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing. Can you give us any insight on how you guys are looking to play? Having someone like Kristen Press, obviously, is a huge boost for any team.
Yeah, she's been absolutely brilliant so far in pre-season. Really excited to have her back in and playing, and she's looking really good. And I think there's a number of players on the front line that will complement the way that she plays, and, you know, she'll complement the way that they play. I think they're starting to gel and come together now. So that we'll definitely have an exciting lineup, you know, going forward. Don't want to give too much away, because that's the element of surprise in terms of the Challenge Cup. But I think if anyone's seen how I played at Gotham, there'll be some similarities to there in terms of the way we want to have the ball and possess the ball. But I think there'll be a little bit of a change that reflects, you know, the personnel that we have within our group.
And overall for the season, what are your goals? Obviously, you touched on having sold 14,000 season tickets already, which is unbelievable. Does that kind of add to the pressure, or is it just adding to the excitement?
Definitely the excitement. I think having that many fans and, you know, knowing that, well, not knowing, but I'm pretty certain that we're going to sell the bank out for our first home game. And just to have that level of interest, plus the nature of the supporters here, that, you know, they're very, very passionate supporters, very vocal. So I'm excited about that game day atmosphere, as I know that the players are. So, you know, with that, there's an element of pressure, because now we have 22,000 people that we need to entertain. Not to mention the fans that are watching at home and in other markets. So there is a little bit of pressure to entertain, but at the same time, that, you know, I know that the team, the way they're playing at the moment, has been really entertaining. You know, as a coaching staff, we've loved watching it in practice and working with the players. So a little bit of both pressure and excitement. But for our team now, you know, we know that we can go out and hit the league and looking to try and get ourselves into a playoff spot.
Yeah, for sure. And final one for me, I just wanted to ask a little bit about this being kind of, it's a project, it's a long-term project, and, you know, I know Annie spoke a bit about ensuring that you've got a good culture and a good environment, and I know we've seen over here sometimes the expectation of results almost immediately, whereas there it feels like, you know, that this is a long-term project that you can invest in, and it's about growing the team. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at the history of expansion teams within the league, you know, they've always finished, you know, either at the bottom or, you know, in the bottom two. So for us, you know, in terms of our performance on the field, you know, we're looking to try and increase that. But the reality is it's very hard to bring a team together. And after 6 weeks of preseason, trying to gel that team to a team that's going to perform better than other teams that have been together for many years, and, you know, players that have that familiarity with playing with each other. So that's a really difficult task for us. But I think if we're looking at the project as a whole, you know, in terms of what the club's going to do, it's not just on the field, but it's that bigger, you know, the bigger piece of what the brand's trying to do in terms of raising the game and providing a quality, you know, in the sports arena. So I think, you know, anything when you're trying to attempt a challenge like that, that's going to take some time to do. I think we've been really happy with what as a club we've been able to achieve already. But, you know, that's just the start, you know, for us to become the club that we want to be and the size that we want to be in terms of the global market. That's something that doesn't happen overnight and it is a slow burner. So, you know, I think when you're looking at that bigger picture, then it is going to take time for us to continue to develop. But I think everyone at the club would be really happy with the progress that we've been made in such a short period of time.
Well, I'm hoping that it all goes really well, because no doubt you'll be not only inspiring clubs over there, but across the pond for sure. Like, to kind of try and replicate that anywhere would be amazing. As you say, not just on the field, but your media team, everything. It looks like something that could definitely inspire a lot of people.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think the biggest thing that, you know, other clubs are already starting to have the conversation with, where we kind of set that precedent, is the community team that we have and our street team and the fantastic work that they do. And, you know, how important it is for them and the work that they do for us to have a fan base. And they've been so key in getting us out into the different neighbourhoods, really embracing all the areas of the community and bringing that community into the stadium. So, you know, we're really grateful to them to have them, and not only the great work that they're doing in the community, but then how that's going to affect the game day experience.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to really hopefully get over to the US at some point and try and see some of these games. It would be amazing to be in a stadium with 22,000 people watching, you know, a domestic game. It'd be unreal. But yeah, just thanks so much for talking to us. It's really interesting to hear it from your point of view, especially with a new project like this, just to see how it's all kind of taking off. I'm really excited to see how it all pans out.
Great. Well, thanks very much for having us, and obviously you're very welcome whenever you come over, and yeah, hopefully we'll get a win for you.
Yeah, great to hear from Freya there, and I'm pretty sure we'll be able to watch all of those games on the Endobrussels Twitch channel, which is really, really good. You can stream them for free. The commentary is interesting, shall we say, but you can watch all the games for free. Time difference wise, sometimes dodgy, but it's great that they've got more competitions in the Endobrussels, because you just want more football. What's everyone doing this weekend, Rachel?
I'm hoping to be at Arsenal on Friday. And then I'm staying on the Chelsea choo-choo train and hopefully getting into Chelsea versus Birmingham. So two FA Cup games for me.
Chloe?
We don't have a fixture this weekend. We're off on a break. So the missus is taking me away to a cabin in the woods.
Oh, how are you managing that with one leg?
With your will. She will be driving. So if I don't turn up on Tuesday, someone
you're in
alert,
a cabin in the woods somewhere. Yeah.
Are you driving?
No, the missus is going to drive.
Okay, I was going to say that should be an interesting drive.
It is. She's not driven in a while. So if I don't turn up on Tuesday, it's probably because I've got another broken leg.
Interesting.
We need a prayer circle for Chloe to come back next week.
That's very exciting. I have got the Sunday off. I'm at Reading in the Championship on Saturday. And then Sunday, I'm going to watch QPR at home to Peterborough. So I won't be at a women's game.
Ew, men's football.
I know, right? Smelly. But that's it for today's episode of Upfront and Football Ramble Presents. If you've got any questions, tweet at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet, at Girls on the Ball, or at Morgie_89. And we'll see you all next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.